No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which is on a mission to make America think again. We're starting a new year, and we're starting a new show, and we're going to have a fabulous year this year. We're going to get a lot of interesting guests, because the idea behind this show is to make you think again, not to tell you what to do or who to vote for, but to put the information out there, because it's what happens in the shadows that makes the world go round. So welcome to another year of Shadow Politics. This will be our 12th season, and I'm proud to be here with my co-host, Liberty Jones, an amazing college student who's about to graduate in May. We'll have to do like some spectacular show with fireworks and stuff when that happens. But welcome, Liberty. Are
Hi,
you out there?
Thank you so much for having me, as always. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And we got a lot to talk about, and a long way to go this year. This is going to be a big year, a big political year for America, because there are elections which could change the course of America right now. And I think that's an important thing to do. I want to talk about that tonight. I want to talk about what we need to do to get our country moving in the right direction. There are a lot of people that support what Donald Trump has done, President Trump has done. I'm certainly not one of them. And I think we all need to think long and hard about what he's doing to our democracy. You tell me what your concern. I just spent 4 days with my four oldest friends. So we all sat around and talked about what old people care about, and I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. But first, I want to hear from Liberty. What are young people? What are your concerns, Liberty? You're about to graduate from school and go out into the work world, or go on to graduate school, or whatever you're going to do. So what are you concerned about?
I'm concerned about the balance of power in our country right now. Seems like we're under a dictatorship. What do you think?
I agree with that 100%. I mean, I hate to put it like this, but, I think Donald Trump's up there thinking, America's my bitch. I can do whatever I want, and nobody's going to stop me. And that's really horrible, And look, I've been watching the price of gas come down, I don't know how the economy is going to do. It seems to be in kind of a gray area, but that's what I worry most about as well, about what he's doing to our democracy, to the framework of America, the thing that makes our country great and makes it work. That concerns me more than ever. And I think on that note, it's important for all of us to be really careful about who we vote for in November, because the only thing that we can do, as you point out there, Liberty, is to try to balance things out, right? Because Congress is supposed to be the bulwark to the president, and vice versa. It's all supposed to balance out, and the justice system is, the third leg of government. We really need to strengthen that against this guy that acts like a dictator, that tears the White House apart, that builds monuments to himself, that puts his name on everything, that tries to undermine our democracy, and tries to always get our attention, divert our attention from what he's doing to something else. And let me ask you, what do you think about this latest incursion into Venezuela? I think it's just that there's two theories of thought that came from the discussions we had this weekend with my old-timer friend. There are people there that think that Trump is after the oil in Venezuela, and then there's other people that think that he's just doing this to divert our attention from the Jeffrey Epstein thing. They've now found 5 million pages of documents that have never been released, that the Justice Department seems to be hiding for some reason. And so there are other people who think this is just a diversion. I know that you have strong ties in South America, Liberty. And what do you think? What do the people in South America think about this? Do you think the people that are not in Venezuela?
So this is a really interesting situation because Venezuela has the largest proven oil reserves in the world, right? And I remember when Trump was inaugurated, one of his great proclamations was that we were going to become independent in terms of our oil production. I think he quickly realized that that's not a possibility after he tore up the national parks and started shooting down bears in Alaska. And I think that a really big part of why he's invaded Venezuela is because of these oil reserves. Everything he does, he's a celebrity. Everything he does is going to defer attention from the Epstein files. At the end of the day, there is no balance of power right now. We're right about that. Congress has no say in most of the things he does. So it's quite unfortunate, but I do believe that if he doesn't want those files to be released, they will not be released. And as of yet, I haven't seen many information on the files that have been released about him. And I think that's really under his control, unfortunately. And I think he knows that. So I don't really think it's a diversion. I also think there's an aspect of colonialism
It's
going on.
hard.
I'm a really strong believer that colonialism never ended. It's just changed the way that it prevails. In the beginning of his presidency, there was a lot of talk about how today war is no longer just shooting down different sites, but it's a war on trade, right? So it's really interesting what he's doing. I think people in South America, they're very optimistic, okay? They look at the world and they want to be happy. They put happiness before money. So I think that they see the situation and they want to celebrate it. It's a new year. That's a very big holiday here for us. And I think that they do look at it with optimism. And so many South Americans are very happy because they see, regardless of this being, the death of international law, they see that a dictator has been taken out of place. My biggest concern now is Brazil next? It's very agriculturally abundant. Do you think that this is just a stepping stone on a greater takeover? And is he going to try and make South America his bitch, as you said? And my other concern is, okay, well, we removed one dictator, but now we have another in place. So is he going to actually do any better? I do see that he's there for the oil, but I wonder what else he's going to want to get excited and put his hands on when he realizes the power that he has. He's really a colonizer, but at the same time, what he did do was beneficial. So I think a lot of people are happy that a dictator is gone. A lot of people are concerned on the international security of South America right now as well, because they're thinking, oh, well, what's next? Is this a takeover? Nobody's going to fight back. The only war Brazil, the biggest country has ever been in, was to support the Italians in the First World War, unfortunately, but and so yeah, I think that's how people are looking at it here. And I think that The Middle East is probably laughing right now, especially I think the most comical part of this is that he let us know in a tweet. So, yeah.
Yeah, what is that? And yes, I imagine they have to be concerned about that. And you know what I wonder about is how his base is going to react to this. Because another part of his platform when he got elected was he wasn't going to get involved in any foreign wars. And right now he's got us tangled up in, well, I don't know what we're doing in Ukraine, but we're certainly involved with Ukraine. We're certainly involved in the Middle East. We're now involved in Venezuela. There's talk about what's going on in Iran, whether we should support the revolution in Iran. And that concerns me because I wonder who is going to get involved in South America now. You know, are the Russians going to want to stave off American influence in South America? And are they going to come to the aid of some other country? My understanding is we have plenty more dictators in this part of the world. And are they going to bond together with somebody else? Are they going to say, yeah, let's get the Chinese or the Russians involved over here so that we have something, so we have an ally to stand up against the United States if we have to? And that worries me. I don't think that he's done anything in this move to make our relationship in this part of the world any more stable. You know, he's out there bragging that now American dominance will never be denied, you know, will never be questioned again. Well, look, we have to understand that we no longer are the dominant power in the world, that we have to cooperate. And it seems to me that this kind of behavior moves us further away from that as well, which I find very, very concerning because, we, at the end of the Second World War, the United States was more powerful than the next 10 countries put together, both militarily and economically. That's not the case anymore. It used to be, you know, when I was your age and I was in college, what America did, the rest of the world followed. We dictated what went on in the world. And maybe he's trying to get back in that position, but that's not going to happen. The Chinese are more powerful than they've ever been.
Yeah.
India has the largest standing army in the world. Like you say, Brazil has all these agricultural resources. My understanding is that one third of the world's oxygen comes from the Amazon. You know, there's a lot of natural resources and other things for America to plunder in South and Central America. And I wonder if some of those countries will stand up and say, look, we need protection. We need to turn to the Chinese. We need to turn to the Soviets. We need to turn to somebody. I say the Soviets, I mean the Russians. We need to turn to Russia, some country, or build a coalition to stand up against the United States. So I think this thing that he's just done makes the hemisphere less stable than it was before he decided to take action against Venezuela. So, and what do we do in Venezuela? He wants to run Venezuela. That's what he says. Well, what do we do? Do we make do we appoint somebody to be president of Venezuela? What do? Do we sponsor a fair election? Do we, you know, what's the next step? I have no idea what the next step is. And I think the next step really tells us what the long-term goals are. You know, whatever they do next, I think will be an indication of what their plan is. So those are the things that concern me the most. But let me ask you, do you, when it comes to America, let's get back on the subject of America for a minute. When it comes to America, do you worry about having a job? Do you worry about owning a house? Do you worry about having a family? Are these priorities for you the way they were priorities for me when I was getting out of college? Do you worry about this stuff, or do you say to yourself, see, I said to myself, all this is going to happen for me. because that's the way America was in those days. We all thought, go to college, you get a good job, you have a good career, you have a good life. That's all happened for me, and it's happened for many of the other people that are my age. It seems that it's not as happening as much for people your age. So is that something that concerns you, or do you just think, you know, I'm going to go out there and conquer the world like we did?
You know, that is something that really does concern me. I think that when you were my age, you know, and when you're growing up around the 1960s, right?
Nope.
That was, you know, we've talked about this, but that was the peak of like American success in capitalism, and it was really influential for the world at the time, I think. And I think that everyone had a lot of hope about, you know, the monetary successes and freedoms of being an American. I think nowadays we're shifting from that a little bit. I think that, you know, the economy is not as consistent, the economic gap is not as equal as it was. And I do have a lot of concerns on in terms of ideology. I think we're straying away, my generation, and I think yours was too, right, in retaliation, but from this capitalist dream. I think nowadays people are learning more about simplistic happiness, right? So, you know, maybe I won't have a really great job or a mansion with a white picket fence that I can live my American dream in, but if I'm happy, I think that's what matters. And I think that's what people in my generation are putting more power towards right now, which is really interesting, actually, because, you know, you talked about Russia, right? So during that time as well, you know, in the 1950s, that was the space race against
Right.
Russia. That was when the US was showing it's the most powerful nation in the world, diplomatically and in other ways. And I saw in the news this week that China and the US are planning on going to the moon again. But this
Well,
time,
that's
China
an
instead
interesting
of
point,
Russia.
right? Yeah. And
So that's
that's an interesting
really interesting.
Point that they revived this, right? Because we were not in space business for a while. We were going to let it be a private enterprise and, you know, and turn it over to the industry. And now all of a sudden, and, you know, I really hadn't thought about that, but that's very interesting that we've gotten back into this thing and now we've taken on the Chinese. And that's, you know, and it is very similar to what happened with the race between the Soviet Union in those days and the United States. And, you know, and also just to add to what you just said, I see that in my own children who are your age and older, that they really, that we didn't care so much about the kind of job we got out of college. We just looked for a job, maybe in the field that we want to study, and we took whatever paid us the most money, and we, you know, but now it seems that my children are more interested in having quality jobs right off the bat, having something that they feel good about and that brings them happiness and not just br and doesn't bring them just money, you know, and you know, and that's the goal of capitalism, right? Happiness equals money. The more money you have, the happier you are. Well, I think that's changed, and I think that's a positive thing because, you know, I used to say that to my wife when we lived in a very kind of upscale neighborhood in Washington, D.C., and when it was time for our kids to go to college, people were all concerned, what college are they going to get into? Are they going to get into the Ivy League? Are they going to get into, you know, this or that? And I used to say to Pat, I don't know why we don't worry about making our kids happy, that we worry about making them successful. And, you know, and I know people that have graduated from MIT and Harvard and Yale, and they're not any happier than people that went to community college and, you know, and went on maybe to a 4-year university or didn't even go to college. I know plenty of people that are happy that don't have a college education. So I don't, it seemed to me that we weren't focused on happiness. We were focused on success, and I think it's a really positive thing that you your generation seems to be more concerned with quality rather than quantity, and I think that's important. Let me ask you this, because I think this is a really powerful thing for women, as a young woman. Let me ask you, I see these like Sports Illustrated swimsuit models, and they're actually athletes. You know, it used to be they were just young women that look good in bathing suits. Now they're actually athletes that have accomplished you know, things on in gymnastics and in soccer and in other sports. And I think that's really positive to hold that up as a role model to young women that look, you can be beautiful, you can be talented, you can be successful in sports, you can be healthy, you can, I think it's a better image for women than just be pretty. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that's the point of doing that is to change, the narrative that women hold in society. We're not just here to sit still and look pretty. We actually have a lot to contribute, and we have been contributing, even though we haven't been noticed for it. So
Well,
I really appreciate that. I
yeah.
think, yeah.
Yeah, and you ha and women always have. And you know, and it's funny how we can compartmentalize that. You know, that I think in America and probably in most places in the world, mothers are very well respected. They're really, we all on a personal level realize how powerful they are and what an influence they have in the lives of all of us, for example. But then, yeah, we don't honor that as a society. You know, we don't compensate women. We don't provide daycare so that they can do other things. We don't make their lives easier. We don't recognize their contribution, and I don't think we ever have. And so, yeah, so that's what I think is very positive. And you know, it amazes me how people can do that. You know, how you can say, I love my mother, I respect her, I love my sister, you know, but when I'm in the workplace, I don't necessarily want to help women get ahead. You know, I just I'm able to I don't know, compartmentalize that feeling, the feelings that I have. It doesn't translate into action. It just and that's always surprised me. You know, one thing I'll say about women. When I was in college, I did a study on women in work, and 75% of all women when I was in college were found in four professions in the workforce. They were either nurses, teachers, administrators, secretarial kind of administrative support, or domestic workers. That was it. 75% of people now of women. Now women are found in every profession. You know, when I was in the hospital last year, I think I saw eight doctors. They were all women. Didn't see a male doctor. You know, many women lawyers. I think GW graduates more women with law degrees than they graduate men. So, you know, we see women act. We've had two women astronauts on this podcast. You know, we see women in every profession now. So they certainly have come a long way, but they still have a long way to go, don't you think? I mean, do you feel any sexism in the stuff that you do? And do you feel that you're accepted in your academic environment and in your work environment the same way men are?
I think that behind every strong man is a stronger woman, and I think that's always been a true case. I think women are deeply intelligent and we are extremely powerful. We're given the power of recreating life, for a reason. We're responsible, emotionally intelligent. I could talk about how much I love women forever, but I do think that
Well,
this.
no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I do think the system is dominantly male, and it has been. I think that is changing now, but that is a fact. And I think that because of that, the people who are in charge of the overall narrative and what is allowed and what isn't still is heavily male dominant. I think we're still trying to break the dominant. I mean, still trying to break the idea that a woman in power is not a bitch or bossy. She can be in power without having to be those things. And I would love to see more women in power, but I do think that people do this blindly. They do put more power into men because that has been the the way that the system has developed. And this is an interesting question, an interesting way to word things. It's kind of an analogy for our democracy as well. I have a question for you.
Yep.
My question from you is, do you think that democracy is actually declining, or are we just seeing it exposed?
Well, that's a great question. And I think that the answer is very complicated, and I think that both of those things are at play. When we look at some of the problems that we've had in recent years with racism, with things like anti-Semitism and the situation with George Floyd and the other kind of racist thing, I wondered that question. I said, have we really dealt with racism, or have we just pushed it under the rug and now it's coming back? Because we certainly saw there's no way that you could have looked at the Trump campaign and not seeing the racism that was inherent in the campaign, that he only talks about brown people, that he only talks about, he wants people from the nice countries, the nice white countries, and so I say the same. I think you're right about democracy. Have we in really embraced it, or was it just easier? Now we're seeing what the results of our democracy are, and we're moving more towards, I don't know, maybe a socialist attitude. We see Mondami in New York, and we see Bernie and AOC coming out, standing behind them, and Tlaib in Minnesota. Is the Democratic Party, for example, headed more towards a socialist bent because they figure young people don't believe in democracy anymore? I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you believe in democracy? Do you think that we have to fight to save our democracy, or should we change? I mean, I think that what you ask is a very, very interesting but complex question. I think there are some parts of socialism that we'd like to embrace, like socialized medicine. Or, universal health care, for example. We certainly have embraced other aspects. I get Social Security, obviously, a socialist kind of concept. So I don't know. I don't know if we all accepted democracy because it's what we had, or if we really wanted it, if people really understand what it means, and if they understand what it takes and the work it takes beyond just the personal freedom that it provides for you. The other what are the other aspects? Do we embrace them all, or do we start to parse this, and does that help our democracy fall apart? It really concerns me. I think that whether Trump put his name on the Kennedy Center, the next Democrat that gets elected will take his name off the Kennedy Center. Those things aren't the important things. The important things are what he's doing to the underlying framework of America by attacking our democracy. So I don't know. But I think we'll find out shortly, Liberty. I think we'll find out whether this is just a passing, I don't know, just a passing thing where we're reflecting on our democracy, and we'll all stand up for it, or whether we'll say, no, we need change. We need change. We need basic institutional and systematic change, not just policy change, but a change in the way America works. I think that's an interesting question. I think we'll find out in the short run. And I think, you know, it depends a lot on what people like you think, on what people like what young people think, what people in the next generation who are coming along think. Because if it's going to change, you're the ones that are going to have to change it. So I wish I had a, you know, a more solid answer for you, but my opinion is that I don't know. I don't know. But I think it's interesting, and I think it's really something that we have to look at, because the thing that bothers me most about what's going on is what's happening to our institutions, what's happening to our institutions, and what's happening to our democracy, how it's being systematically undermined. So let me ask you, if we made you leader of the world, what's the first thing you'd want to do? Or leader of, better yet, leader of America. What's the first thing you would want to do? What's the first executive order that you'd want to put out? Besides naming the Kennedy Center, the Liberty Jones Trump Kennedy Center. But beyond that, what would your second executive order be?
My second executive order, I think, would be to really focus on the education systems in the United States. You know, I think that's the key. I think that's the key to freedom. Knowledge is power, in my opinion. I think that's the key to strengthening the economy. You know, you want intelligent workers. I think that will even better the healthcare system. Indirectly, I think education is really at the core center of this, and I do see that. You know, I think a problem that my generation feels is that our vote doesn't really matter, and I think that's also an issue of education. So I really do think that that's something that has to be focused on more. I think that the United States, at the end of the day, has a lot of economic power, and I think it's being used in all the wrong ways right now. It's actually really interesting because, you know, in South America, I used to work as a tutor for fifth graders when I was in high school in low-income Brazilian communities. And this was during the pandemic, where the teachers were not being paid in public school systems here in Brazil. And it was really unfortunate because most of these fifth graders were illiterate, and they had no terms of education. And you know, when you're dealt with a situation like that, it's really hard for you to evolve, to become economically independent in a system like this. You know, I do agree. Maybe this is not a democratic backslide. Maybe it's realignment towards something new. But I think those are really central issues that need to be tackled in order to even shift. You know, I think something else important to consider, my rise to power would be interesting during this time. I would really want to see how it played out, because I think I would do a lot of great things. But I don't know if I would change the course of American power, you know, on a global field. I think, as you said, BRICS is gaining a lot of power as well. You know, China has dominated South America. I think that's their race with the United States right now. I think that's a really big part of why Trump's in Venezuela as well, you know, with their Belt and Road Initiative and things.
Right.
But what I was saying is that they say historically it takes an empire 200 years for its downfall. And the United States has been a country for now around 200 years in power as the world's superpower around. So I don't know if it's inevitable. I don't know if, you know, the decline in power of the United States on a global sphere, I don't know if education would help with that. But I think that's something that really needs to be focused on. You know, what about you? If they made you president tomorrow, what would you do?
Well, I certainly would change the name of the Kennedy Center to the Michael D. Brown Donald Trump Kennedy Center. But beyond that, no, I think you're right. I think you bring up a really important point, and I think that the Trump administration agrees with you, and I think that's why they're attacking our educational institutions. You know that the Department of Education is under attack, that they're getting rid of PBS, they're getting rid of public television and public radio. They're going to stop funding them. I hope we can fund them privately, but they're going to stop funding them because what? Sesame Street is teaching our children how to count and how to read. I think that's exactly their point. I think they agree with you. I think that an educated population is harder to control. I think it's harder to manipulate. I think it's harder to get over on, you know, and I think they understand that. And so they're trying to change. They're trying to train that narrative so that people are ignorant, that they stay ignorant. You know, the first thing that was done after the Communist Revolution in China is they got rid of everything that happened before the revolution. They got rid of all the books. They got rid of all the they don't teach their children any of the history of this great country that has a great rich history. They only teach what happened from the Communist Revolution on, because they want your base of knowledge to be something that supports their narrative, that you're easily manipulated. Look, you know, the thing that Trump says, he says whatever he wants to say, right? He doesn't count on you actually being aware of what's going on in the world. When they fact check him, sometimes it's just ridiculous that he gives a speech and he lies, you know, 18 times during the speech when they check the facts. But his people don't care about it, because his people are, you know, I hate to use the word ignorant, but that's the truth. They're ignorant of what the facts are. They only look to see what supports their world vision or their world view. And now, because of social media, right, we can go on the internet, I don't care what your craziest idea is, you'll find people there that agree with you. There's all sorts of, you know, conspiracy theories about whatever you want to believe. There's support for everything. So I think ignorance and a lack of education really supports the kind of narrative or worldview that a dictator wants you to have. So I think what you say is really important. Of course, wherever Mrs. Brown is, if she's listening, you just made her smile because she's been a lifelong educator, you know, and I think, but
this
I think
this call will be recorded.
Cool. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why that came up in the middle of our broadcast, but anyway, I think that you're absolutely right. That education is something that we really need to deal with. And again, you know, we pay a lot of lip service to people like you, to the next generation. You're the future. You're the great hope. But then what are the first things we cut when the budget gets tough? We cut education, we cut programs for children, and I think you're right. I think we need to reprioritize that and put it at the top of the list. I don't think that I could come up with anything better other than to say that to build on what you said, I would make civic education give them a new major role, because I think we don't teach it anymore. You know, when I was young, Liberty, there used to be a thing we called being an American that everybody was proud of, the things that you know, we all knew about the founding of our country and the history of our country. Now, it was a male history, and it was a white history. It wasn't necessarily all-inclusive like it should be, but it still gave us a sense of national unity and national pride that I don't think exists anymore. I see it, and that thing that bothers me more than anything, to see that eroded, where people think it's no longer, we're not all together as Americans. We're seriously divided. And I think education I agree with you. I think it's really important, and maybe that's one of the first things I would do too. I would do that. I would try to undo a lot of stuff that's been done, of course. I would change the Department of War back to the Department of Defense. I would change, I would reinvigorate the Department of Education. I would get USAID back on track because that was the number one thing we had in international relations. That's the way America should be seen. It should be, it's, I think, it should be seen with its hand out to help, not with a gun pointed at you. And that's where we're headed. We're headed back to that. That we all stood up when I was young. We all stood up against the war in Vietnam. But that was the whole thing in Vietnam, right? It was supposed to be, we had to contain communism. If they took over Vietnam, then they were going to take over Laos, and they were going to take over Thailand, they were going to take over, the rest of the world. So we had to stop them. We had to stand in that, in their way with the gun. And I think I think Trump is trying to get back to that kind of policy. And I don't think it'll work anymore. It didn't work back then, And I certainly don't think it will work now. So I'd want to change that. I'd want to change the direction of the country, I think. That's the thing I worry about most right now is that we're headed down a path that's not going to work out for the world, and it's certainly not going to work out for Americans, and it's not going to work out for people your age, for people you're not going to do better economically because of it. You're not going to do better from a standpoint of personal freedom or anything else. I think that we're really, really headed down a dark road. So, what do you want to do for this season? We're in a new season. What kind of guests do you think you'd like to see on the show?
You know, that's a great question. I think that we do a great job of choosing guests. There has never not been a conversation on here where I haven't learned something. But you know what would be really interesting is to have somebody here who works with social media. I think that's a really big part of politics right now. And I think a lot about, whether social media strengthens democracy and, voter participation, democratic participation, or whether it just weaponizes division even more. And I think that would be an interesting conversation to have with somebody who's more informed on the subject.
Well,
I'm
yeah.
not.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what about you?
Well, no, and I think that I want to say if you're out there listening, listen in the next couple of weeks because I certainly am going to try to do. Let's try to make that our first new guest in the new year. Somebody that works for social media, and we have some contact. We've had people on before, and we'll try to get them back on because I think you're absolutely right. It's such an important factor, and it's a new factor, and that is a really, really important question, as whether it strengthens our democracy or it just, provides fuel for the narrative of whoever wants to, challenge our democracy. And and I think the answer to that probably lies in the way it's used. And how it can be manipulated. So it would be great to get somebody on, or maybe several people. Maybe we can even do a series where we have a couple of people with different attitudes about it on to talk about it, because I think that's really, really important. And it's something, I'm sure you would do a great job leading the conversation because it's something that's so much more a part of your life than it is mine, even though it's become an important part of my life as well. I think about we had these college kids when we moved, and we were trying to help them out first, their house, and we got rid of things that we had had in the house we lived in for over 30 years. And one of the things we tried to give them was a flat screen TV. And they said, nah, that's okay, we don't want it. And I'm like, what? Well, no, you can just have it. And they said, "Nah, we don't watch TV. We all have computers. We don't have cable. We don't, you know, we all tune into everything on our computer." So yeah, you know, Mrs. Brown and I in our brand new house have free television. You know, that's still our main source of information. But I know for young people, it's not anymore. So it'd be great to have some people. And what do you think about the consolidation of the media? That would be an important thing too, right? Maybe if you get somebody to talk about that, how these major companies like Paramount and some of the other big people in Hollywood and are interacting with companies like Amazon, and how things are being consolidated. Warner Brothers and some of these other big studios are merging with each other. Is that going to help get better social media, or is that just going to make it easier for a handful of people to manipulate the social media? I think that,
Absolutely.
yeah, I think if you ask Karl Marx, he would say, yeah, it's going to make it easier for them to manipulate. I think if you ask Bernie Sanders, he would say the same thing. But I don't know the answer to that question. So that's great, and we'll try to do that. And you know what? If there's people out there listening that have ideas, please call into the show at 627-6008, 1-800, and give us your ideas, or send them to bbsradio.com/shadowpolitics, because we'd like to know what you want to hear, and what you want to you know, what's of interest to you? What do you think you need to know before you go to the voting booth the next time? Well, we're running out of time here, and I just want to know, I've got a few words I want to say at the end of the show, but what's your message to America? What's your New Year's message to America, Liberty?
Here's message to America is this year they are calling it the year of the horse. It's a year of a lot of action. I hope that that really does transpire. I hope this is a year full of forward movement. I think last year it was actually the year of the snake, of shedding, releasing. So I think that we're no longer paralyzed by fear. I think now we can act. And I hope that that will lead to great outcomes in very important elections that we have this year, as you mentioned. And I'm excited to see those things happen.
Yeah, and I think that's a great message, and I don't know that mine's any better. But what I would add to that is, I want people to think back about what really made America great. Think about the liberty and the freedom that we have. Think about the positive things that we've done to influence the world. Think about the structure that is so important to make our democracy work. That's my message to America. Take the time to look beyond what your immediate concerns may be, to a more long run concern about how to make America healthy. You know, let's make America healthy again. Let's make, you know, stop this nonsense about making America great again. America's always been great, but let's make it healthy again. Let's make it smart again. Let's make it well educated, and you know, everybody should have a, by the time they get out of secondary school, even if they don't go to college, they should have a really good basic education so they can deal with democracy. You know, when we set up the government, people like Thomas Jefferson were concerned about uneducated people being involved in government, in making decisions on you know, how our democracy would work. He said you need an educated populace to make those decisions. And I agree with him. Now, his solution was just to keep everybody, their solution was to keep everybody out, you know, not let women vote, not let people that didn't own land vote, not let anybody basically that wasn't a white aristocrat vote. Well, my solution would be not to exclude people, but to include people, and to make sure that we're all included in a positive way that supports our equality. the equality of the system. That's my hope for America. Well, I think it's time for us to say goodbye, and I hope you'll start to listen on a regular basis if you're out there. We're going to have some social media people. We're going to have other people that will give you the information we think that you need to make educated choices. And I want to thank, again, all our listeners who have faithfully listened over the years. And I want to thank my co-host, Liberty Jones. You know, this is probably, you know, I think that life is full of good breaks and bad breaks sometimes. But one of the best breaks that I've ever gotten, and certainly on this show, is finding Liberty, because she is just an amazing person who's injected real life into the show, and her perspective is so important. And I hope you listen, and I hope you join in. And so, again, thank you, Liberty. Thank you, listeners, and tune in next week. And now we're going to leave you with something that I hope you consider to listen carefully to the words of this song, because this is really a beautiful anthem to America. Here's Simon and Garfunkel with America. Thanks. Listen to us next week. Thank you, Liberty.
Thank you so much from my heart.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.